evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, May 14, 2019. President Kiir says he's committed to implement the revitalized peace deal.
Our country stands at the crossroads, that is to embrace and consolidate peace or to slide back to war. I stand for peace and stability, and I completely reject war. My government can therefore spend all the resources.
And leaders from Raja are making new demands.
We want our own state. We want our own state, instead of Raja.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir is urging lawmakers and other officials to support the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. Kiir said he stands for peace and will spend all resources at his disposal to consolidate peace and stability in the country. A Juba-based civil society describes Mr. Kiir's tone as reconciliatory, but says the president should accompany the talk with action. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
During a speech at the reopening of South Sudan's Transitional National Legislative Assembly in Juba today, President Kiir warned that unless the government and the opposition prioritize implementing the peace deal, the country won't move forward. Kiir denounced war and called on all parties to the agreement to work together to restore peace and open corridors for freedom of movement of people and goods across the country.
Our country stands at the crossroads, that is to embrace and consolidate peace or to slide back to war. I stand for peace and stability, and I completely reject war. My government shall therefore spend all the resources at its disposal for the purposes of consolidating peace and stability in our country. This is not only our constitutional duty, but also it is our moral and religious duty to bring peace to our people.
Kiir did not specify what resources he would make available for implementing the deal. He received sustained applause from lawmakers, diplomats, and other officials when he insisted he is ready to work with the lawmakers and opposition groups to restore stability. Mr. Kiir again invited opposition leader Riek Machar to return to Juba to participate in the implementation of the peace deal.
I have completely forgiven him, and all I ask from him is to become a peace partner, for he is no longer my opponent. We have agreed, and then we have to work together. The weight of responsibility on our soldiers is quite heavy in light of what the religious leaders and our own people expect of us.
President Kiir talked about events at the Vatican retreat he and Machar recently attended at the invitation of Pope Francis.
In the retreat, I was greatly touched and humbled by Pope Francis' action in kneeling down to kiss our feet. And to be honest to you, I was shocked and I trembled. But I also knew deep down in my heart that His Holiness did this to show the Christ humility. He was telling us to be humble and to be good servants of our people. Pope Francis' act of humility is both a blessing and a curse on all of us. It is a blessing if we heed to his call for peace, and can be a curse if we play games with the lives of our people.
South Sudan Anglican Archbishop Justin Badi Arama challenged the country's leaders to make use of the examples set by Pope Francis for creating peace and reconciliation at home. As for developing the country, Kiir promised construction will get underway on three major highways that will link the country's three regions of Upper Nile, Bahr el Ghazal, and Equatoria with Juba. And the president says his government is working with China to build the Juba-Rumbek Highway, the Nadapal-Toret Highway to connect to Upper Nile, and the Kayaye Highway to connect to Western Equatoria Raja Road. Addressing the ouster of Omar al-Bashir and other political events in neighboring Sudan, Kiir praised Sudanese citizens for succeeding in democratically bringing to an end Bashir's 30-year rule, and said the country is now at a critical juncture.
I want to congratulate the Sudanese people for their victory and to express our solidarity with them. The people and government of South Sudan fully support the aspirations of the Sudanese people for the peaceful, democratic, and secular nation.
President Kiir urged all Sudanese parties to negotiate the transition to a new government in good faith and to widen the table to include other armed groups from Darfur, Kordofan, and Blue Nile. Civil society activist Edmon Yakani, who came to hear Kiir's speech this morning, says the president declared his commitment to implement the peace deal, but the people need more than speeches.
That's great, but that will happen when they walk the talk. Let not only end up in the speeches that we have seen like in the past. We wish that this is translated to reality, and not only the president, but the principal of the other ruling parties should have the same spirit and take into concern.
A new transitional government of national unity is to be formed in November after the parties agreed to extend the transitional period for another 6 months. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some leaders and community representatives from the Greater Bahr el-Ghazal region told officials of the Independent Boundary Commission, or IBC, that South Sudan should maintain President Kiir's 32 states and possibly create more, including one for disputed Abyei region. The IBC was established in the peace deal and is mandated to determine the number of states and their boundaries. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from WOW.
Delegates who hail from 10 states and the Abyei administrative area, who met with the commission at WOW's Peace Hall, say maintaining the current 32 states during the transitional period would avoid delays in implementation of the peace agreement. Gabriel Malwech, who represents Gog State, say that if the agreement is implemented in good faith, each state has a lot of natural resources that can be exploited and used to develop the area.
We are ready to make any development based on our local resources. We have cows, we have rivers, we have local revenues that we collect from our local people here that can make our economic viability of the state to progress.
Jacob Mabel Lam, a delegate from Twichi State, supports the idea of maintaining 32 states. He says citizens in Twichi State believe maintaining the 32 states will allow South Sudanese officials to develop powers at the grassroots level.
Twichi State people are strongly remain in their position as Twichi State and neither demand going back to former 10 states nor demanding any additional state at their site. On the other hand, for the case of our borders with neighboring states, Twichi State is remain committed to respect 1st January 1956 borderlines.
Other delegates at the meeting say they want South Sudan's leaders to create even more states, including one for the Abyei region. One representative from Tonji State say they want the current Tonji State divided into three states to avoid further intercommunal clashes which have left dozens of people dead this year. Abdullahi Fartak Gondu, a delegate from Loli State, says the community of Raja prefers to have their own state curved out of Lol, arguing that Raja meets all the qualifications required for an area to become a state, such as land and human resources.
We want our own state. We want our own state, the state of Raja.
Edward Chadze, head of the IBC delegation to WOW, encouraged participants to speak openly about what they wanted for the number of states and their boundaries. He says the information and ideas collected from this meeting will help the IBC and the other officials determine how many states South Sudan should have and their boundaries.
We are here, of course, purposely to hear from the public about the choice and the priority for the number of states and boundaries which will guide us in our assignment as the mandate of IBC, which is the Independent Boundaries Commission.
The IBC delegation is expected to conclude its consultative meeting with officials and citizens of Greater Bahiragal Zaire region this evening and return to Juba tomorrow. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
Some residents of Juba town are criticizing the government's move to allocate more than $3 million for treating wounded soldiers outside South Sudan. President Kiir's administration officials approved the decision on Friday. Civil society activists say the money should be used to equip the country's military hospital so wounded soldiers can be treated inside South Sudan. Onen Walter Solomon has more for VOA from Juba.
Lukutu Bismarck, a project officer at Community Empowerment for Project Organization, OSEPO, says the wounded soldiers deserve good health care, which he says they would get inside South Sudan if the government allocated the $3 million for the country's military hospital. Bismarck doubts the money be used for its intended purpose and says the money will be put to better use inside the country.
We have scenarios of a crisis management committee that was tasked in 2013, after 2013, to lobby for funds that will recover or will be compensating some people whose property were damaged. The public is not actually kept aware until now about that money. Secondly, we had actually scenarios about South Sudanese students' arrears that were promised, but until now we get news every month students are having strikes. Others are not actually paid in foreign universities.
SEPO advocacy officer Zainab Osman says the government should conduct more research to determine the accurate number of wounded South Sudanese soldiers.
There are people who also got wounded, crossfire sometimes, mines. They've also had their limbs amputated. Some of them are now no longer work. They should also be considered.
Osman says a part of the $3 million should be used to improve the Juba Military Hospital to benefit the entire civil population and says that would reduce the high cost of referring patients for medical treatment outside the country.
Because the military hospital is also another entity that is really helping us, even as civilians sometimes who go there. But the state of the hospital is not up to standard. Now most of these people might have to go out for this treatment. It's going to cost more. But if we had doctors who are qualified, who can do this work, then this money would have been spent here and it would even have improved the economy of this country.
18-year-old Juba resident Johnson Manyang says he was surprised to learn by listening to the radio that the ministers approved such a huge amount of money to facilitate medical treatment of wounded soldiers outside the country.
If such money were to be in the government hand, actually, they could have been used for other priorities rather than being given to the wounded heroes. Of course, I'm not denying them the chance to be given such money, but the priority should be first prioritized, like the fifth process. We are in crisis.
30-year-old wounded soldier Bol Jambo Magany, who is being treated at Juba Military Hospital, says on December 20th, 2013, the first day of the conflict in Malakal, a military vehicle ran over his lower back, breaking his back and spinal cord.
I was seated, and when the conflict broke out, as I was hurrying to get up, immediately my colleague turned out to be my enemy, rushed into his vehicle and ran over my back, broke my backbone and injured my spinal cord, paralyzing both of my limbs.
Magany says his family, relatives and friends are the ones who facilitated his treatment. He says he will soon be discharged and readmitted if and when his pain becomes too much to bear.
God uses people to contribute money to help me. Sometimes my brothers help me, but it is a challenging situation. There is no power sharing in life. Our life is in the hand of God.
Magany says he has nobody to stand for him to appeal to the government for help. Military Hospital Administration declined to speak to VOA on information regarding the medical services and equipment at the facilities, demanding a letter of authorization from higher authorities. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon reporting from Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, at least 5 people were killed after gunfire at demonstrations in Khartoum. We'll bring that story after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Name one skill you think everyone should learn.
I think everyone should learn to read. Yeah, because I don't think life is even possible without reading.
Know how to cook and also learn how to ride bicycles.
What I can say is the biggest skill is agriculture. When a person is supporting an agricultural process, if you are digging and you have a garden, you use that to attract for cultivation. I can say it is a good skill.
Everyone should know how to drive in case of emergency. You have your friend sick or your mother sick, so you can drive faster to go to the hospital.
If everyone has the skill of listening, there will be no conflict. We don't listen, we just talk.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. Today we are talking about ways to stop or prevent dementia. It is a rapidly growing public health problem throughout the world. 50 million people suffer from dementia, and in the next 30 years, that number is expected to triple. Researchers are looking for ways to treat or prevent dementia, and VOA's Carol Pearson reports some of the work being done is promising.
Regular exercise, a healthy diet, maintaining healthy blood pressure, cholesterol, and blood sugar levels help stave off dementia as we grow older. Dementia is not a normal part of aging, but age is a huge risk factor. As people around the world live longer, health agencies and researchers are looking for ways to prevent, stop, or treat dementia, including Alzheimer's disease, one of the most common types of dementia. David Shore is about to undergo a new procedure that could treat early-stage Alzheimer's. He's with his doctor, Vipor Krishna, a neurosurgeon at Ohio State Wexner Medical Center.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
The procedure Shore is about to have involves sound waves. Ultrasound waves target and open the blood-brain barrier, a protective layer that shields the brain from infections. But Krishna says the barrier also makes it hard to treat neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's.
Opening the blood-brain barrier allows us to access more of the brain tissue and be able to increase the effectiveness or bioavailability of the therapeutics.
Shore and his wife Kim were willing to try any new treatment that might help with his dementia. Kim describes the couple's reaction when they received a phone call inviting Shore to participate in a clinical trial.
There's this trial, would you be interested? And without really knowing what it was, we said sure.
Shore became one of 10 patients enrolled in the study. The trial tests MRI-guided imaging to target the part of the brain responsible for memory and cognition. Krishna explains that's where Alzheimer's patients have a buildup of toxic proteins called amyloid.
Higher deposition of amyloid goes hand in hand with loss of function in Alzheimer's disease.
Krishna says this procedure might allow a patient's own immune system to clear some of the amyloid. In the procedure, ultrasound wave pulses cause microscopic bubbles to expand and contract in the brain.
The increase and decrease in size of these microbubbles mechanically opens the blood-brain barrier.
The patient is awake during the procedure.
First treatment, David. Here we go.
This area has high amyloid, so we'll be opening this area.
Opening the barrier may one day allow doctors to deliver medication straight to the site of the disease. Kim Shore realizes her husband might not benefit from this treatment.
We're hopeful that it can help him, but we also know maybe it'll help somebody else.
Shore was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at age 56. He's glad to be part of a study that could help others who are in the early stages of Alzheimer's, even if it doesn't help him. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Sudan's ruling military council says at least five protesters and an army major were shot dead last night in the capital Khartoum, just hours before the council reached a deal with protesters' leaders on transitional authority. Jason Patenkin reports from Khartoum.
Gunfire in the heart of Sudan's capital, Khartoum. Armed men in uniform fired in the air and at protesters at an ongoing mass sit-in Monday night, killing several and wounding dozens. Sudan's Transitional Military Council blamed unidentified elements for the attack and said one military police officer, an army major, was among the victims. But it was unclear who was responsible for the shooting. Yasser Mohammed, a lawyer, spoke to VOA after fleeing gunfire on Nile Street just before midnight. He said, unfortunately, they can't say who attacked them. But from what he's seen and experienced, said Mohammed, it was likely shadow soldiers in the Secret Service who caused this massacre. Sudan's army has defended protesters against previous attacks on their weeks-long demonstration for civilian rule. But there are also military police, national security services, and a heavily armed Darfuri militia, the Rapid Support Forces, linked to ousted President Omar al-Bashir. Adding confusion is the belief among protesters that these various groups may be wearing each other's uniforms. Those with gunshot wounds were taken to nearby hospitals. But in a field clinic set up by protesters, dozens of wounded streamed in as gunfire crackled outside. Many suffered from tear gas that security forces fired at protesters. Others had head wounds and said they were beaten. Yusuf Al-Sayer said a member of the Rapid Support Forces, who was in uniform, beat him on Nile Street. He said, gunfire is usually normal, but people started running and Rapid Support Forces started coming under the bridge. I tried to hide since I have a disability and can't run, said Al-Sayer, but an RSF soldier started beating me. I yelled, I'm hurt, he said. But the soldier didn't listen and just kept beating. The violence came as a surprise as the ruling military council has been in talks with protest leaders for the past few weeks on forming an interim government. But the field clinic's Dr. Iman El-Tihani said the situation appears to be escalating.
The first few days of the sit-in, there was a lot of violence, to be honest, from the forces. And then there was a stillness or a calmness afterwards for almost a little less than a month. And now recently, especially today and yesterday, there's been like some sort of a relapse into the violence.
Monday night's violence seemed timed to upset progress in talks between Sudan's military and protest leaders on a transitional authority. The attacks came just hours after the military council announced they had reached a deal. Sudan's prosecutor general's office had also declared former President Omar al-Bashir had been charged over the killings of protesters. The military took power after ousting al-Bashir on April 11th from 3 decades of rule. The coup followed 4 months of anti-government protests, sparked by fuel and food shortages in which dozens were killed in clashes with security forces. Protesters erected barricades and blocked roads around Sudan's defense ministry, where they have been ever since demanding the military hand power to civilians. A funeral procession on Monday night carried the body of one of the killed protesters. The military council and protest leaders have said the violence will not stop them from forming a transitional government before holding elections. But with attacks on them increasing, protesters have to figure out which troops are with them and which are against them. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Khartoum.
You You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. During a speech at the reopening of South Sudan's Transitional National Legislative Assembly in Juba this morning, President Salva Kiir warned that unless the government and the opposition prioritize implementing the peace agreement, the country will not move forward. Mr. Kiir said he completely rejects war and called on all parties to work together to restore peace and allow people to move about freely. There was sustained applause when the president said he was committed to working with opposition groups to restore stability. A civil society activist in Juba says Mr. Kiir must back up his words with actions. Local leaders and community representatives from the greater Bahal el Ghazal region think there should be even more states than the current 32, including one for the disputed Abyei region. They told the Independent Boundaries Commission, or IBC, which is visiting the area, that maintaining 32 states during the transitional period would avoid delays in implementing the peace deal. Gabriel Malwek, who represents Gok State, says if the peace agreement is implemented in good faith, each state has natural resources that can be exploited and used to develop the area. The IBC wraps up its meetings with residents and leaders tonight and is expected to return to Juba tomorrow. And finally, Sudan's ruling military council says at least five protesters and an army major were shot and killed last night in gunfire at a sit-in outside military headquarters where demonstrators are demanding a civilian-led government. Dozens of others were reported injured. Protesters said soldiers were to blame, but the army said unidentified elements were responsible. The U.S. Embassy in Khartoum said actions by the military council resulted in the violence. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Nabni Baledna by Emmanuel Kembe.
Analigo kwa na keni fitaluma Shema fo fitaleza Rijambu Umalkinenne kalibanu watataluma Kuliyambilenne kalibanu watataluma Shema fo fitaleza Rijambu Shema fo fitaleza Ala galisim chokol kaslada Uwala nura shantu
You've been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Nabni Baledna. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. If you have a comment about this show, you can find us on Twitter. Our handle is at VOA South Sudan. If you're planning to travel outside Juba Town where we don't have any FM station, you can still listen to us. Our shortwave frequencies are 11850 kilohertz. 13865 kilohertz and 15180 kilohertz. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
let me amana bi ikhlas.